This is the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm David Walker, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Evan Birchfield. Evan, how are you?
I could be better,
DW. Yeah, I feel like you're speaking for all of Atlanta right now, given what we just witnessed. As usual, we're here to recap the Falcons game on Sunday. In this case, it was a loss to the hated rivals in New Orleans, the Saints, in week 11 of the 2020 NFL season. The final score, Falcons 9, Saints 24. They lost by 15. And honestly, I don't even think that tells the full story of the game. The Saints moved to 8-2. They're at the top of the NFC South. The Falcons fall to 3-7. Their second loss under interim head coach Raheem Morris, in arguably their most lopsided loss of the season under the new head coach. So, Evan, for me, this game was really about two halves. The Falcons looked like they were mostly in it in the first half. I think the game was 10-9 at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. But the second half, it was just a complete meltdown by the Falcons. They did not score again, completely outscored. And, of course, the Saints just ran up the score and ultimately ended up winning by 15. What's one of your main takeaways from this game?
That Younghoe Koo is pretty much the only person who showed up. I think the main takeaway for me is that Raheem Morris he's not going to be the head coach, because there was speculation, you know, not by me, but like by a lot of people that, oh, he's in the running to be the next Falcons head coach if they went out and stuff. They looked flat. There was no game plan. I mean, there was, but if you watch the game, it's like, if you have a game plan for this, you know, the Falcons last game was November 8th. So if you want to say from give them that day off and the next day off, if you want to say November 10th to now November 22nd, and that's what they came up with. And the Saints didn't have Drew Brees, as you mentioned, they had Taysom Hill. They didn't have Marshawn Lattimore, their best corner.
Yep.
And that's what you put on the field. I mean, it sucks because, like, I was kind of hoping for Raheem Morris. Like, I don't have anything against him, but I do think it's fair to be critical of him for keeping Dirk Koetter along and making absolutely no changes on, you know, offensive side of the ball, which you could say, oh, well, maybe he didn't make any change. He wasn't allowed to make changes. Well, the first thing he really did was fire the special teams coordinator, Ben Kotwicka, yep, or whatever. So, you know, if he wanted to keep his job or like win the job, I guess you could say, having Dirk Koetter in place to, you know, get the Falcons in position to put up 3 field goals, that's not going to cut it.
Yeah. So well said. I couldn't agree with you more. And I've seen people suggest that, you know, maybe Morris didn't have a say in it, but as you noted, one of the first things he did was fire Kotwicka, I think. Kotwicka.
Yeah. We always get it wrong, and it doesn't even matter because
it doesn't matter.
Gone.
The guy's gone. Exactly. And you brought up the injury situation. So coming into this game, mm-hmm, you know, Drew Brees with the multiple rib fractures, the punctured lung, he was put on injured reserve. So actually, not only will we not face him in this game, we won't face him in 2 weeks when we play the Saints again in Atlanta. And on top of that, their top corner, Marshawn Lattimore, was also out. Now, I do want to say the Saints have some decent corners behind him, so it wasn't like their quality fell off a cliff, but it certainly opened up opportunities that should have been taken advantage of. For the Falcons, the only injury of note, really, was Calvin Ridley, and he ended up playing. So they came into this game pretty healthy, with the exception of Dante Fowler, who is on the COVID-19 list. And obviously, they don't have Tack McKinley. So I think there was good reason to think that they would not be able to consistently generate pressure without those guys, because they haven't been able to do it even when they were in there. But the Falcons came into this game with some notable advantages. Taysom Hill's first start ever in the NFL. And yet, this game just went sideways on them. One thing I want to point out, because as we're covering the game, I often see some of the reactions from fans, and Matt Ryan was sacked 8 times in this game. We'll get to that as we get into the statistics and what we saw. Mm-hmm. And I saw a few fans say, Matt needs to get rid of the ball. And I understand the sentiment, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, okay, it's third down. He needs to throw it at the feet of the receiver. Here's the problem. And I just want to address this because I saw a lot of people sort of harping on this. Number one, when your quarterback is still inside the pocket, he can't just throw it away. He is still liable for being called for intentional grounding. So a sack it would be essentially a sack anyways. He's going to lose the yardage, lose the down. Number two, in several of those occasions, all of the defenders are facing the quarterback. And I don't know if I can emphasize this enough, but if you're a quarterback and you don't have receivers open and you're inside the pocket, throwing it into the defense, even if you're planning to throw it at the feet of your receiver, throwing it into a defense that is facing you is asking one of those defenders to make a play on the ball. It is a dangerous play. There's a reason quarterbacks, not just Matt Ryan, you can watch games from Drew Brees, from some of the great quarterbacks of all time. When those defenders are facing the quarterback, they will not throw it. They'll take that sack, and for good reason. They don't want to take the intentional grounding. They don't want to run the risk of giving a defender the opportunity to make a play on the ball to pull in an interception. And I feel like that needs to be noted because Matt Ryan did not have a great game, and I don't think anyone's going to argue that. But I think we should be fair about those criticisms. He took 8 sacks. I put a lot of that on Dirk Koetter and his game plan. Maybe some on the offensive line and just frankly, some of it just being the Saints having a good pass rush. But you have to look at the context of each play. It can't just be with every single sack, Matt Ryan needs to throw the ball away. That's just simply not how it works. It may work that way in Madden. It does not work that way in the NFL. I wanted to point that out because I saw a lot of people taking exception to me pointing out these things. And frankly, since we run this podcast, I get to vent.
Yeah. Also, if I can just add real quick, when you're in the pocket like that, usually the replays, they show it a little more slowed down. When you're in the pocket like that, from the angle you see on TV, it's like you see the guys on the outside, right? So when one of the edge rushers, either on the blind side or the other side, they're like surrounding him. We see it, but that doesn't necessarily mean he sees it. And the time it takes to throw the ball away without it being intentional grounding does take time. So it's kind of like there's instances. I'm not always going to defend it. There certainly is times where you can throw the ball away, but there's a lot of times where
certainly
it's better to just take the sack than to get your arm up. And you're going to get stripped, and then there's a turnover.
Yeah. Yep.
It's
exactly.
Easier to fumble it.
100%. And I think that's a great point. It's for us when we're watching the game and we're seeing those plays in slow motion, we see the receiver down the right sideline, streaking free and Matt Ryan's not throwing it to him. We think, oh, he missed that pass. And in real time, sometimes that is literally a split second to your point, Evan, which is a great point. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm defending every single play that Matt Ryan had, because I want to be clear. I don't think he had a good game today.
No, he had a terrible game.
Yeah. So I don't want to pull any punches. Matt Ryan is certainly responsible for the plays he doesn't make and for poor throws and for poor decisions. But I also feel like we have to keep everything in perspective when it comes to the game, because a lot of times it becomes, let's pile onto this player, and it's not necessarily 100% fair to that guy, especially when we, like you said, and I think it's just a fantastic point, when we get to watch things in slow motion. These players, they don't get to play in slow motion. They get to play where he has 2.5 seconds to make a decision. And, sometimes he's just, he moves off of that read and he moves to the second one. And that initial read may have freed up a split second later. And that's just sometimes not how it works. All right. You and I have both vented a little bit, which is appropriate after a game like this. Let's talk about the inactives, Evan, for the game. Who was out for the Falcons? I know there were some interesting names again.
Yeah.
And then who was out for the Saints in this game?
So as you mentioned, Dante Fowler Jr., he is on IR COVID. So players who are on IR like that, like Drew Brees, they don't show up on the inactive list because they're on injured reserve. So these are guys going into the game who just were rolled out for the game. So Kurt Benkert for the this is the Falcons. Kurt Benkert, who was called up recently to the active roster, was inactive. Quadri Allison, who we've seen recently basically taking the spot of Ito Smith, was again inactive. So Ito Smith was back on the roster. Undrafted free agent Tyler Hall, a corner, and John Wetzel, who pretty much just assume he's always going to be there. And DeAndre Sanat was in another interesting one, who was a game day inactive for the Falcons. For the Saints, Marshawn Lattimore, as you mentioned, was out. Chase Henson, a linebacker. Offensive lineman Derek Kelly. Tight end Josh Hill. Running back Dwayne Washington. And defensive lineman Malcolm Roach.
Yep. So no big surprises there, although I will say the curious case of DeAndre Sanat continues with the Falcons. Don't understand what's going on with him. And you know, I guess he's a two-down tackle. He's a guy that's there to stop the run. But again, just really, really weird how he's being handled as a player. Anyhow.
Because he's not phenomenal or anything, but he's not garbage either. Like, he's serviceable if you give him actual reps.
Yeah, you and I both watched the PFF stats, and he has shown, at least in that statistic, to be a decent player, worthy of at least being active on game day. And it's sort of weird that he doesn't get that opportunity.
Oh, he's definitely, I'll say this much. I'm not going to say he's great or anything, but there's people who are on the defensive line who are on the continue to be on the active game day rosters who are not grading nearly as well as DeAndre Sanat. So.
Which shouldn't be surprising for this Falcons team. All right, some injuries that happened during the game. Michael Walker, I believe, went out in the second quarter against the Saints. I believe that was a hamstring injury. So he I don't think he returned later in the game. And obviously the most notable name injured during the game was Julio Jones. I think that was in the second half. He went into the blue tent at the beginning of the second half, and he did end up playing a few more snaps, but it was clear that his hamstring was continuing to bother him. And I think it's fair to say that once he was out of the game, the Falcons offense completely fell apart, which again, I think points more to Dirk Cutter and his inability to scheme a meaningful offense without Julio Jones than it does about anything else. But those were the only two injuries that I noted during the game. So Evan, let's talk about the Falcons offense and what they did or didn't do, more accurately in this game. So why don't you give us the rundown of the statistics?
Well, first off, they scored no touchdowns. It was all field goals. Since we don't have a special team section, shout out to Youngway Koo, who scored three field goals for the Falcons, the only points that the offense technically scored today. They got, you know, close at times and then just stalled and took the easy field goals. So, but we're kind of used to that kind of thing. But Matt Ryan, as you mentioned, had a not great day. He went 19 on 37 attempts, 232 yards, zero touchdowns, two interceptions, and a passer rating of 48.5, which is not great at all. Like, yeah.
No.
Certainly, you could say this was his worst game of the season. Go ahead.
I was just going to point out, one of the interceptions was on the Hail Mary, so
yeah.
But he also had some passes that were very acceptable.
Very close to being intercepted. Also, not really his fault, but as you mentioned, sacked eight times entering this game. So through the first nine games, was only sacked 19 total times and sacked eight times in this game. So that kind of sums up the game overall. But running game was non-existent. Todd Gurley had eight carries for 26 yards. Brian Hill had four carries for 18 yards. Both players had longs of seven. Yards. And, you know, going into this game, it was already noted the Saints had the second strongest, or I guess toughest run defense in the league. So not necessarily shocking, but not great. In the receiving game, Calvin Ridley led the day with 9 targets and caught 5 of the passes for 90 yards, a long of 46, which I believe was like on the first drive. Russell Gage had 12 targets, the most of anyone, 7 receptions for 58 yards. As you mentioned, Julio Jones, pretty much a non-factor, had 2 receptions for 39 yards. And that pretty much sums up the offense. It was kind of frustrating not to see Alamide Zaccheaus after his great game against the Broncos. Only 1 reception on 1 target for 10 yards. But for some reason, Christian Blake had 4 targets. I think it's pretty clear that Zaccheaus, outside of Jones, Ridley, and you could say Zaccheaus could technically be in the running for the 3rd best receiver, but we'll give it to Gage for now. But he should be targeted more and used more. But incompetence yes. in the play calling exists. So that is the Falcons offense.
I would say it doesn't just exist. It's predominant in the offensive ongoing. Play calling. Yeah, ongoing, nonstop. The Saints defense, on the other hand, had quite the day. As you noted, 8 sacks of Matt Ryan. 8. Mm. 8 sacks. That's ridiculous. Cameron Jordan, who almost always has a big game against the Falcons, he had 3 sacks on the day. Behind him was David Onyemata with 2 sacks, Trey Hendrickson with 2 sacks, and then 1 sack for Demario Davis. As you mentioned, the 2 interceptions of Matt Ryan, one of those went to safety Marcus Williams and another one to corner Janoris Jenkins. And just some other notable stats. Jenkins had 5 pass deflections on the game. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who was one of the corners that had to step up in the absence of Marshawn Lattimore, had 2 pass deflections. In total, Marcus Williams, Demario Davis, Kwon Alexander, Shai Tuttle all added an additional pass deflection. This was a game where their defense honestly looked legit. But again, I think some of that comes down to Dirk Koetter and his play calling. So I don't want to give them too much credit because I feel like some of this comes down to the fact that Dirk Koetter really called quite a dreadful game. And I think anyone that watched it, what's amazing is I saw repeatedly it, because I know we hammer it at the Falcoholic. We hammer it on this podcast that we are tired of Dirk Koetter. I actually saw former players, including Eric Weems, ask what Dirk Koetter was doing. And Steve Wyche, who is a national NFL reporter, used to write for the AJC years ago, make some very critical comments of Dirk Koetter. So if you guys think that we're being unfair to Dirk Koetter, let me tell you, we are not the only ones noticing the absurd play calling, noticing the ineffective routes that he designs. Mm-hmm. Even national writers, former players are noticing it, and they're becoming more and more audible about how bad a job Dirk Koetter is currently doing. So, Evan, anything else you want to add about what the Falcons offense did on the day? Thank you again for pointing out Younghoe Koo, who I think does deserve a ton of credit for what he did in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's only fair. I've been harsh on him in the past, and that was mainly because they didn't really seem to trust him. I mean, he only had 1 attempt for 50 yards last year in 2019, and it was ugly. But, I mean, it went through, but it, like, hit the goalpost and bounced in. And it was like, why are they not using him for long field goals? Now, he has struggled this year with some PATs, but aside from that, I mean, he's been reliable. Unfortunately, it hasn't really mattered a whole lot because, you know, you get 9 points and you're down, you know, losing 24 to the Saints, that's not going to usually do a whole lot, but you know, it's definitely not his fault. He's literally the only person not to blame. But yeah, I mean, you're going to hear it a lot, not just by us, but from everybody and, you know, any site you follow, any, you know, writer, Dirk Koetter is not doing great. And it's been like that for far too long. In my opinion, you know, the whole Raheem Morris thing, not making any changes, you know, on offense, kind of showed that like there's no long term fit here, because Dirk Koetter is the problem. Like we saw it today, the play calling You know, you can say what you want about the defense. The play calling was just vanilla at best. Nothing creative. You know, the Saints, and it was only a matter of time. As you mentioned, it was 9-10 in the second quarter. And it looked like, well, this could be like a terrible game where the Falcons somehow like score on accident and win the game. But it was only a matter of time for the Saints to kind of heat up because, you know, Taysom Hill, as you mentioned, first game he started, didn't look great early on or anything, but it when you're in these kind of battles where you've got incompetence on the Falcons side and you've got a quarterback who's starting his first game, who isn't really even that good to begin with, you know, having his first game and they're going against each other. Usually what wins out in that kind of situation, and you can look at statistics to back it up, is whoever has the better head coach, because they're going to make decisions as the game progresses, especially after halftime. And I think that's what we saw. The Saints just after halftime knew what to do, knew what not to do. The Falcons just kept doing what they were doing, which wasn't working to begin with.
Perfectly said. And I think that is going to be a recurring theme until we finally see a change in this coaching staff, which I think is, after this game, looks like it's almost a given. So before we go into what the Falcons defense did against this Saints offense, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back on the Falcoholic Podcast. This is Dave Walker. I'm joined by my partner, Evan Birchfield. We're recapping the Falcons' loss to the Saints in the division, 24-9 in New Orleans. The Saints go to 8-2. The Falcons go to 3-7. We've talked about what the Falcons offense did and the incompetence there. I want to talk about what the Saints did on offense and what the Falcons did on defense, because this is, I guess, a little bit more interesting. As we mentioned, Drew Brees did not play in this game. We will not see him again this year, at least unless the Falcons make the playoffs. That's not happening. And the fact is, with his injury, he will not play in 2 weeks because he is on injured reserve. So the soonest he will play is the game after the Falcons in a few weeks. And honestly, we're at the point now where it doesn't even matter. We went against a quarterback who started for the first time in his career in Taysom Hill, and we made him look like a Pro Bowler, which I know is getting tiresome for Falcons fans. I know it's exhausting to see this defense continue to prop up players that honestly should not look this good, and against a competent defense would not look this good. And yet here we are. So Evan, why don't you give us the story on what the Saints did offensively based on the statistics?
So Taysom Hill had 23 throws, 18 of them were caught for 233 yards, no touchdowns or no interceptions, but a passer rating of 108.9. He also doubled, obviously, on the ground as a running back, so he had 10 carries for 51 yards and two touchdowns, along of 20. That's kind of where he did the most damage, but I think what helped the Saints the most was they were able to use him as a runner, but as a passer, he was still pretty effective. I mean, 233 yards. He had one more yard than Matt Ryan passing. But aside from Taysom Hill running the ball, Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray actually had almost a exact split on carries. Kamara had 13 carries for 45 yards and a touchdown, while Murray had 12 carries for 49 yards, no touchdowns. And then in the receiving game, Michael Thomas, who has been not great all year dealing with injuries and punching teammates and whatever, had obviously had his best game of the season, because that's just, I mean, I would have bet my fortune he was going to have the best game of his season.
Of course.
So like naturally it was against the Falcons, but 9 receptions off 12 targets for 104 yards. Didn't score, but didn't matter. You know, lots of slant routes, and they were effective. So what can you do? Emmanuel Sanders had 4 catches for 66 yards, one of which was, thank God, brought back on a flag, because he beat, I think it was Denard in the end zone.
Yes.
And it was like a 50-yard throw, but it ended up coming back because of a holding on, I believe, their center, McCoy. So Latavius Murray had 2 receptions, 36 yards, and that pretty much sums up the offense. They were pretty effective against this Falcons defense, which should surprise nobody.
Exactly. And I think that's the really the thing that I think many Falcons fans felt confident about coming into this game was the fact that we would be playing a Saints team with Taysom Hill at quarterback instead of Drew Brees. And granted, Drew Brees has not been himself. You know, he is over 40. It's clear that his arm is not what it used to be. He is not the same quarterback he used to be. Even Saints fans know that at this point. Like, I've seen Saints fans basically relent and say, Drew Brees is not the man he used to be, which is to be expected. You know, these quarterbacks eventually age catches up to all of us. And yet, Taysom, who has never started an NFL game in his career, he didn't even get more than 10 snaps in any game in 2020. He had no more than 10 touches in any game in 2020. That is stunning that he started the entire game. And what, to me, what stands out was even at the within the Falcoholic chat, we all talked about this. We thought that Sean Payton was bluffing. We thought that he was basically saying, oh yeah, Taysom Hill's going to start, but then he was going to stick Jameis Winston in there to really throw most of the passes. But no, Winston, I don't think he played.
No,
correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
he didn't play. So Taysom Hill was legitimately the starting quarterback. There was no smoke and mirrors here from Sean Payton. And let me be clear, Sean Payton would sell his mother out if it meant getting an edge on another NFL team. That is who Sean Payton is. But no, he started Taysom Hill, who they're paying $10.5 million per year. And he had a career game, of course, against the Falcons defense. As for what the Falcons defense did, they did have a few sacks. Grady Jarrett and Alan Bailey combined for a half a sack each on early on in the game, and it killed one of the Saints' earlier drives in the first half. Deion Jones had a sack on a blitz, one of the rare, very few blitzes we saw in the game, which was head-scratching in and of itself. And Charles Harris also got sort of a cleanup sack. And I think, I may not be right about this, I think Charles Harris actually leads the team in sacks right now. I'll have to go back and double-check that stat, but I'm pretty sure he leads the team in sacks right now, which is sort of a sad thing. The Falcons came into this game with 14 sacks.
He's definitely the leading pass rusher because I think his only competition was Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones. So
yeah, exactly. And to be fair to Charles Harris, I don't want to criticize him too much. He was not brought in to be a top pass rusher. So the fact that we're getting, you know, 3 or 4 sacks out of him is a good development. But again, it sort of shows you where the Falcons defense is.
Yeah, that's not Charles Harris slander. That's Falcons slander.
Exactly. Exactly. Charles, you're great.
He has earned his keep. He was what, a 7th round conditional or something trade?
Exactly. So
like those guys usually don't even make the team.
Yep. So we are happy with Charles Harris getting sacks. We are not happy with the fact that the Falcons are yet again at the bottom of the league in sacks.
Yeah.
As far as tackles, Keanu Neal led the team with 7. Darquez Dennard with 6. Deion Jones, AJ Terrell both had 5. And then a handful of players from that point forward. A couple of the guys that stood out, Dennard had a little bit of a rough game, got called for some penalties early on. And, you know, he's recently coming off of the IR list, so I don't want to hammer on him too much. AJ Terrell, I thought, had a decent game. And even though Michael Thomas had 100-plus yards, if you go back and look at the game, it was because there was absolutely zero pressure on Taysom Hill. And there is only so long that your corners can stay in perfect coverage. So, again, I think the first-round rookie has looked good this season. I continue to be impressed by him and his play and his growth in a very difficult rookie season without training camp, without preseason games. He continues to impress. And honestly, I don't feel like the defense was the problem this game, even though they gave up, again, 24 points to a Taysom Hill-led team. I don't look at this unit and think, oh, man, they were the reason they lost. I still, I don't know about you, Evan. I will ask you this in a second. I still feel like the offense was the major disappointment in this game. The offense with high-paid players, with first-round draft picks all across the board, with Hayden Hurst, who was barely targeted in the game. This part of the team, in my mind, is what let down the entire team. It was the offense and what the offense.
We take offense to the offense.
Right, I took offense with the offense. It was the offense that failed to live up to their part of the bargain. Even though we can point to the defense and point out individual plays, I still feel like it was Dirk Cutter, the play calling, the execution of the offense that ultimately led to this blowout win for New Orleans. What do you think? Do you agree, or do you feel like the defense still has a good ways to go?
No, I definitely agree. I think it's, you know, it was solely on the offensive shoulders. You could sit there and nitpick about certain stuff on the defense. But, you know, for some reason, you know, Taysom Hill is just good, like, against, like, doing certain plays and stuff against any team. It seems like I see this guy run up the middle, and it's completely obvious. Like, when he scored that rushing, one of the rushing touchdowns, it was completely obvious he was going to take it, and they didn't even touch him until he got in the end zone. And this was, like, basically at the goal line, folks. It's you know, but that's hard to scheme against anybody. And as you said,
sure,
a lot of us at the Falcoholic, we thought that it was BS that Taysom Hill was, you know, maybe he started a couple, like, did, like, a drive or two. But we wouldn't have thought, oh, Jameis Winston would have nothing in this game. Understand, Taysom Hill hasn't thrown a touchdown pass since 2016 when he was at BYU, and that was to Mitchell Jurgens.
Oh my God!
Against Utah State, this man just beat the Falcons and hasn't thrown a touchdown pass, collegiate or NFL, since 2016. Like, I mean, but I guess it is the defense's fault. Shit, I don't know. It's this whole team. You know, it's like, it's the whole team. Yeah. I'm not going to, except for Younghoe Koo. He's the only one who, you know, nobody yell at him this week. He's fine. Yeah, but like, it's just overall, I mean, if I had to choose one side of the ball, it's the offense, because they had they had 9 points. They were uninspired. Their play calling was vanilla, as I mentioned earlier. Just nothing to be excited about on offense. And you have Julio Jones, who obviously dealt with something, but Calvin Ridley, just, I know he had 9 targets, but it just seemed like the game plan for him was just, I mean, 46 of it came off one play. I don't know. Yeah. 'Cause it's crazy too, because they started the year so strong. I think the first, what, couple games, Gage, Ridley, and Julio all were going off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm dumbfounded by it, but I think it's going to be interesting because we still have the Saints again. We got a tough schedule still going forward. But this game pretty much hopefully put to bed the, hey, let's bring Raheem Morris back, because this team needs a complete wash in my eyes, just from top to bottom.
Yeah. It's, if there's one positive that comes out of this game, it's that, the talk that, and honestly, it was an article that published this morning at the Falcoholic that came from Jason LaConfora. So take it with a grain of salt. Jason has a bit of a history, but he was saying that essentially the Falcons were considering Raheem Morris as a long-term head coaching candidate. I think this game may have cemented that this team, this organization, needs a fresh start, period. The Dan Quinn era, which really is, if you want to look at it fairly, is continuing into the Raheem Morris era. It needs to come to an end. There is something about what Dan Quinn did between 2017 and now that has broken this franchise. And it pains me to say that, because along with almost everyone else, I loved Dan Quinn as a person. I thought he was fantastic. I really like Raheem Morris as a coach. I think that he deserves another chance somewhere else. I just don't think it needs to be in Atlanta. And this game, in my mind, has cemented the fact that the team needs to move on. It's time to move on. It's time to write off this era of the Falcons. It's time to look for some fresh blood across the entire coaching roster. Don't keep anybody at this point. For me, that is the one blessing in disguise out of this loss to the Saints. I do not like losing to the Saints. I hate this team with a passion I cannot describe. Going back to the days of the NFC West, for those of you who are old enough to remember the Falcons playing the Saints in the NFC West, and yes, that actually happened.
Yeah, and I am not one of them.
Right.
What year was that?
Right, exactly. Yes. NFC West, when it was the Falcons, the Saints, the Rams, and the 49ers in one division. Yes, that used to be a division. Going back to those days, I hate this team. But this loss, I think, cemented the fact that this coaching staff needs to go. You play the backup quarterback. You lost 24-9. You could not figure out how to use your expensive first-round weapons to put up more than 3 field goals in the first half. It's an embarrassment. You deserve the shame that people are throwing at you. And honestly, Falcons fans deserve better than this. We deserve, with all of the crap we've put up with from this franchise, to still be fans. We deserve better than to watch this kind of product on the field every single week. It's time to make a change, Arthur Blank. I hope you do it. I believe you will. I do believe that this is going to spell the end of this era, as painful as it may be. So, Evan, we have a few more games to close out this season. Next game at home against the Raiders. After that, against the Saints. Any closing thoughts about this loss on the road against our division rival?
Buckle up, folks, because it's going to be bumpy. I don't know. I mean, the season's done, officially done. Like, if you were still, like, on the hopes that this team might run the table and make a playoff spot, which was technically possible and is technically still possible because they could go win out and go 9-7. But it's not going to happen. Let me put that out there. But, you know, I think the only thing you should really do if you feel like watching these games, and I certainly and DW certainly wouldn't blame you if you decided to take the kids to the park or go for a walk instead or whatever you choose to do. Go golfing, I don't know. The thing to pay attention to is the pieces that are going to stick around. And by that I mean Foy Luakon, looking at AJ Terrell. There's some good talent here that's going to be, you know, Olamide Zaccheaus. You know, there's some talent here that the next regime, you know, is going to have in place. Obviously, you know, you look at certain guys like obviously edge rusher. There needs to be some changes and stuff, but there's some pieces here still. I think Russell Gage is super good. I love our wide receiver depth. I would prefer to see like some more practice squad guys make the roster. But the thing that scares me is Raheem Morris doesn't care about, you know, what does Roland look like? So maybe next year, blah, blah, blah. Like he's not going to be here next year.
Exactly.
So they're not going to evaluate the talent on the practice squad, but I would like to see kind of guys like that be called up. Austin Edwards, defensive end on the practice squad, be called up just to see how they do, you know. So just enjoy it, folks. I mean, it's football. It's better than nothing, as terrible as this team is. And yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to be optimistic here because it's terrible.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a great point, Evan, with everything that's going on in the world. I'll be honest, I'm quite surprised at how well the NFL has held up in this time. We've gotten, despite the pandemic that's going on and the increase in cases across the entire country, we continue to have NFL games every single week, which I think is honestly been an amazing accomplishment And I'm so grateful to be able to watch NFL games in the midst of all this, or else I don't know where we would be mentally. With that said, you know, we're coming up to Thanksgiving. We're coming up into the holidays. I do want to say to any of our listeners who are listening, please, 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 please stay safe out there. We're rounding some corners. I do feel like we're on the cusp of getting back to some level of normalcy. So please take care of yourselves, take care of your families, take care of your loved ones. Be smart about the holidays and do what you can to keep people healthy into 2021. So Evan, with all of that said, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Evan Birchfield, on The Falcoholic, along with the rest of our talented writers. Nothing exactly going on. I'm sure there'll be plenty of Dirt Cutter talk on the website this week. as DW said, just have a safe, happy Thanksgiving. You know, one thing to look forward to, next time we play the Saints, we're wearing our throwback. So that's fun.
There you go.
There's something to look forward to.
Something we've got to take our victories where we can find them. As for you guys, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW, and of course updates on our podcast at Falcoholic Pod. And of course, check out thefalcoholic.com daily for our write-ups and updates on the Atlanta Falcons. So for Evan Birchfield, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for listening in. We'll talk with you next time.